Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Beautiful Legacy Podcast. I am your host, Abigail Gagnon, and today we have a special guest, Rena Friedman Watts, and we are going to talk all about her career, her podcast with her dad. I'm sure other things sprinkled in there. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time today, Rena. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you so much for having me. I love that you have legacy in the title of your show. Legacy is something that I have been wanting to learn more about with my dad. I guess as you enter midlife, mid-career, you start asking those bigger questions. So I am a mom of four kids, 15 and under. Actually, just celebrated a birthday right before this. We made a homemade cake with my youngest. He just turned 5. And it's been a beautiful adventure. I got my start in reality TV kind of before reality TV was even a thing in the talk show industry. I got an internship at the Jerry Springer Show, and away I went into Hollywood land. I went to Purdue University and worked at a radio station on campus, an NPR station, where I kind of just walked right in there and said I wanted to work in radio and was lucky enough for there to be an opportunity for me to start there pre-automation. And so that even kind of plays into my podcasting journey where I kind of fell in love with the audio medium. I would get stories off the newswire and edit them and practice reading them and figured out what made a good story, how I could rewrite them to be more entertaining. And then in my second year of working there, I learned how to edit audio and drop in music and bring in music under talking. And I loved being in the booth. In fact, sometimes I would sing in the booth and make air check tapes. And then I interviewed at WGN in Chicago. I got that opportunity by walking into the alumni office on campus, and they had a connection in Chicago. There unfortunately wasn't an opportunity that was right after me graduating, but while I went up there for that interview, I saw that Jerry Springer was looking for interns in the same courtyard. And so I walked across to NBC Tower from WGN and ended up getting through security and starting there 2 weeks later. And it was honestly like one of those best experiences of your life that you like look back on later and you're like, what would it have been like if I stayed there? And a lot of people did. A lot of people stayed there for 20 plus years. I personally didn't think the show was going to last that long. So yeah, I ended up after leaving that show and kind of getting burnt out from working 70 to 100 hours a week for 2.5 years. I decided to move to LA and try to get into reality TV there. And so it was a big pivot. I knew no one, and all I had was enough shows that I had worked on to get into the Producers Guild. And I went to Producers Guild events and red carpet events and tried to network. And I took a secretary, essentially a glorified secretary position at a special effects animation company in Burbank. And it was a family-run business, which was really great. It was three brothers, the Kyoto brothers. They've now done amazing things. Actually, they executive produced Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which was like a cult classic, and they had a huge following around that. And now it's being turned into a video game, and they've gotten other series on Netflix. And they were working with the big studios. At the time that I was there, they did Team America with Paramount, and they had an interstitial on Disney. And I really got to learn the behind the scenes of the making of TV. And, if you have a pilot, how does that get turned into a series? And what is the budget behind that? And how many people are on payroll for that? And what are all of the different roles involved in those things? And so I ended up working for them on and off for a couple of years. They were nice enough to let me go onto the road a couple times when I applied for VH1 and these other reality TV shows that don't get picked up necessarily. And so I would go work on a show for like 6 weeks and it doesn't get picked back up, and then they would let me answer phones again. And so finally I was able to leave, and I got a post-production supervisor role at Nanny 911 for 3 seasons. And and then on to another show at MTV. And it was a lot of bouncing around from show to show, like hoping shows are going to get picked up or go more than one season. And then I met my husband on the third season of Nanny 911, and we met online, and he was in grad school, and then he wanted to get married, and I thought I had gotten Hollywood out of my system, and I was ready for the next chapter. And you know, when you're enamored and young and think you're ready for the next chapter, you just do that. And so I got married, had three kids in 4 years. It's been kind of a whirlwind. And then I joined corporate America for a bit while my kids were young. And I was a program manager and worked for a telecom company and organized lunch and learn events and fell in love with LinkedIn because I realized that you can use LinkedIn to connect with people and make them your friend, kind of like working in television, and then you can get them to come to events that you're putting on. And so then I went from working in the telecom industry doing that to working in the financial space doing that to becoming an entrepreneur and doing that for influencers. And then I worked for some influencers and podcasters and then decided to start a podcast of my own. And then here we are today.
That is a lot of different things that you have had your hand in. I think that from the beginning, it kind of just shows that like the answer is always going to be no if you don't ask. And like if you want something, go for it. And if it doesn't pan out, it's not meant for you or it's not meant for you at that time. And I think that so many people get so anxious of like, well, if I ask, what if they say no? But it's like, but what if they say yes? Like, what could your life end up being because of that?
I absolutely love that you got that from that description of my stream of conscious there, because absolutely that is something that I have done a lot is asking. And I'm actually reading a book right now, Million Dollar Weekend, and he learned from his dad, Noah Kagan, that the more rejections you get, then you're getting closer to the get. Ask, 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 and then get. And that's a really great way of looking at it. I also look at it like every no is just a reframe, and you need to ask in a better way or in a different way or shift a little. And then it's not ever really, very rarely a no.
Yes, absolutely. And I think like with this podcast, like even I've like reached out to different organizations and there have been a couple that haven't reached back out, but I've gotten to have some of them have connect me with people that work for them that have been on the podcast. And I've had people be like, oh, well, how did that happen? It's like, I asked, I emailed and they connected me with someone because I liked what the organizations did. And I think, like I said, it's the answer is always going to be no if you don't ask.
I have a really good example of that. So I was working for this financial firm and, you know, I started off and we were putting together these events, and in the beginning, 25 people would show up, 50 people. Then I think my biggest one was like 75. And I reached out to this girl online that I had connected to, and I saw that she was putting on bigger events, like 2,500 people, and that she had worked with speakers like Gary Vee. And we hired her on one of our events that we were doing. And her and I really hit it off, but the financial sector wasn't her strong suit. She was more like in the entrepreneurial space. So she didn't end up like necessarily hitting it off with my boss. But then when I left there, she was like, hey, do you want to help me secure sponsorships for an event that I'm doing? And I was like, yeah, I could totally do that. You know, is there a script? She was like, no. She was like, but when you get people interested or close to like wanting to give you money, you know, here's a spreadsheet of like 10 pages of people that I would love to be sponsors for the event. You know, she offered to basically get on the phone and help me close the deal. And let me tell you, when I got my first yes after reaching out literally full time for like probably a week and a half straight, I think I jumped literally from the floor onto the couch where my kids were sitting. And yeah, I got two sponsors. It's like once you get the first one, then you know what works, rinse, recycle, repeat. And I got a second one. And then I found my way to Toronto to be a part of the Haste and Hustle event, a Gary Vee event. I got to be a part of the media junket. I had decided that I wanted to go to that. And I was like, I don't know how many reach outs I'm going to have to do, but the numbers game does work. And it's like, once it works once, then you see the messaging that works and you can always adjust and tweak. But yeah, a lot of my career, even my nanny 911 job, I had applied to that post producer, I think, 3 times before I got a yes. I think I drove the guy nuts, you know? I had sent him my resume with like a formal cover letter. It was so blasé. And the third time I was just like, hey, Bill Clinton's no longer looking for interns, so this job sounds like fun. And I was just snarky and used a one-liner. And then turns out he was like a fan of Bill Clinton and he thought that was hysterical. And The third time, I got an interview and I ended up starting that night. Will a one-liner always work? No, but it is a combination of grit, persistence, and continuing to shift your message.
Absolutely. And I think too, not all organizations or, you know, bigger names or whatever, but sometimes, you know, if you tell them like, hey, I've worked with so-and-so person or these organizations have been on my podcast and they're able to see what you can do with that, then you're more likely to get a yes from maybe some other people as well.
100%. Actually, the very first guest that I aired, he wasn't the first one that I taped, Evan Carmichael, told me, he was like, I hope by you having me on that it will lead to you getting other people. And then he was like, hey, start with Nick from Book Thinkers. He was like, I was one of the first people that was on his platform. And, you know, this guy has had on hundreds of authors and big name people. And the more of those that you sprinkle in, like you said, you could say, yeah, I've had Evan Carmichael, I've had Nick Hutchinson from Book Thinkers, I've had James Altucher, Jerry Springer. And also here's some of the subjects that I've covered, some really tough topics that I've tackled. And here's some of the testimonials or some of the feedback that I've gotten from my guests. All of those things help.
Absolutely. And I know that you have the Megawatts Production. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Megawatts Productions, I mean, I've had a lot of pivots there. A lot of my business that I've done is people reaching out to me for things and then me deciding like, hey, is that something that I would like to do? I mean, last week I went to a networking event locally here in Houston and I was telling somebody about my podcast, how I like to interview daddy's girls or inspirational fathers or anybody that has a little daddy drama in their life. And this guy was like, hey, you know, my brother started a nonprofit here locally. His son has a rare form of muscular dystrophy. He's got a great dad story. And then another person that I had met at the same event was like, I have a studio in this shared walk space. I was like, oh, great. Cause you know, I rent space at another studio here locally, but it's just audio only. I'd like to do a 3-camera shoot. You know, this could be a great piece for this guy's nonprofit. And it's such a, like an intimate story. I feel like it would be good for him to have it for his website. And you know, not only just for my podcast, the audio version, but it would be nice, I feel like, for YouTube. And yeah, so we're now shooting that a week from now, and that's going to be a new client. Other opportunities that have come my way have been similar. You know, I had a friend that I won, I think, one of her Instagram contests. She was doing like, I think, a wax job or something on Instagram. And then I was like, hey, I waxed off like everything in college. How about like lashes or something? So her and I like got to be friends. And then I told her about my past life working in reality TV. She was like, oh, my husband owns like a studio in the back here. And he was like doing a healthcare podcast and he was looking for somebody that could brief the host, book the guests, supervise the 3-camera shoot, supervise the web team and manage all the deliverables. And I ended up doing that for a year. And it was simply, you know, just from networking or letting people know the types of things and projects that I want to work on. Other like best-selling authors have reached out to me and they wanted testimonials for their book and they didn't have time to reach out to people, but they had kind of an idea of who they wanted their testimonials to be from. So I've done that kind of work. What else? You know, I have a client that I work with right now that I essentially am just their back end. Like they pick the guest. They have somebody that's sponsored the episode already. And then I help them with the script. I sit on the recording, supervise the edit, send it back to them ready for broadcast. So I can work in that capacity too.
That's really awesome. And how many people are you working with in with that production company?
So I've been working on that one show that I just mentioned for 3.5 years. So they're like a steady. And then a lot of other clients are that I've worked with recently are kind of like, hey, I can get you started. Like you could do a couple coaching sessions with me if you don't want to pay for that whole done for you approach, where I'll get on and I'll do some coaching calls with people. Like here's all of the elements of getting started with a podcast. And here's all you need to be thinking about before you launch one. And if you need any of that a la carte, then that's something that we can talk about too.
That's really awesome. And how did you come up with the name?
Megawatts Productions. It's totally a play on my last name because my last name is Watts.
I figured as much, but I was just curious if there was like another meaning behind it.
It's funny too, because even how I started with Megawatts Productions was when I was pregnant with my first kid, I had worked as a post-production supervisor on syndicated shows, and yet I had never taken an editing course. And so I decided to enroll in like this community college that a lot of Silicon Valley people taught at. And I loved Final Cut Pro. And so I took that class once and then I wanted to go deeper into it. So I took it a second time so that I could do another project. And then I had people in the community that were like, hey, can you shoot my bris? Can you shoot my bar bat mitzvah and, you know, make a video of that? I had another friend of mine who was a teacher and was like, I'm doing a class on how to look at the brighter side of life. You know, what does happiness mean to people? I was like, oh my God, that'd be so funny if I did a man on the street walking through San Francisco doing that. And so I like literally, I was, I think, 7 months pregnant and I had my husband follow me around like downtown San Francisco. And I literally went up to cab drivers and opera singers and Mormons and street people and just asked them, where do you find happiness or what does happiness mean to you?
That is so cool.
Yeah, my friend used that to start her class. I cut it down to like a minute and a half reel. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she started her class like that. And then I ended up even donating it to, you know, a nonprofit in town where they could use it for a similar lecture. And it was fun because it was all like local people and people from all different walks of life expressing their opinions on that.
That sounds like so much fun just to make. I can't imagine. I love talking to people and especially like when you ask people the same question, I always find it interesting to hear people's answer. Like with my legacy question at the end of every episode, it's always interesting to me. Sometimes people say similar things, but it's always interesting to me how everyone has such a different answer in general.
100%. I think the one that stayed with me is I went up to a clown. And he was giving out balloons to people. And he said, happiness is making other people happy. It's so simple, but it's really true.
I love that. Yeah, sometimes the simple things and the cliche things, they're like that way for a reason.
And he like honked his nose, which was so funny when he gave me the balloon.
That's hilarious.
It totally made me laugh and made me happy.
That's fantastic. And I know at the beginning of when you were talking, introducing yourself, you had talked about how like you wanted to get into the radio space and like you went in and asked, but what, like how long before that were you wanting to do radio hosting, producing, whatever, and what got you into wanting to do that initially?
That is such a good question. I think, you know, from the time I was a young girl, my grandfather had done the lights on Broadway and he was just always listening to music in his bedroom, you know, had the record player on. And I had like such a positive association with the arts from seeing my grandparents be into it and then my dad be into it that it interested me because it interested them. And, mm-hmm. you know, I was always singing to the radio and putting on performances and then getting praise for that. And so even when like my great grandparents were in the nursing homes, I would sing to the residents and I would sing to them and people would kind of gather around and I was like, oh, wow, you know, it was bringing people joy. And so then that brought me joy. And then I, you know, I went to a private school, kindergarten through fifth grade, and was like extremely sheltered. And there was only like one other girl in my class. It was like a very boy heavy year. And I begged my parents to go to public school for middle school. And then I went to middle school. They listened to me, but it was tough to transition from such a sheltered environment to kind of like being fed to the wolves. And I was bullied and naive and picked on. And then I decided I really did not want to go to my high school, like my home high school in the neighborhood. I definitely wanted to switch. And there was a school in Kentucky called DuPont Manual, and it was a youth performing arts school. And you could audition to get in or play an instrument or go into theater or have really good grades. And I auditioned for singing, for vocal music, and didn't really pay attention to all of what you had to do to get in. So you were supposed to be able to sing in a foreign language and sight read music and sing an art song. And I didn't even know what all of that was, to be honest. And I went in there and gave it my all and walked in there like so confidently. And then I didn't get it. And I just felt so crushed. And my dad went to the head of the music department and was kind of like, what can she do to re-audition? You know, she really wants to go here. Is there any way that she can try again? And my dad like told him the story about how sometimes he compared me to a Kentucky Derby horse. I'll never forget this. He was like, sometimes, you know, horses start in the back and then they're an outside horse and they make their way to the front. And he was like, my daughter's like an outside horse. You know, it's like, the guy went for it, though. I don't know. I don't think too many people ask, like we were talking about. And so I ended up studying with this music teacher that a lot of the students from that school took private lessons with. And I studied with her for 3 months over the summer. And I worked so hard to be able to like learn how to sight read music and really swallow my pride and walk back in that room and re-audition. And I got in, but I never really felt accepted since I was rejected that first time. And for 4 years, I just tried to blend in and never really sang out and never really felt like I was a star student and that there were all these more talented people around me. And my senior year, Nicole Scherzinger, who's like a big deal now, took me into the music closet and was like, Rena, I see you. Like, you made it. You know, she was like, you stuck this out. Today is the day that like the colleges offer scholarship money and you should sing out. She was like, I'll sit in the front. And she like really affirmed me. And I did it. I got two offers to two small schools and I took the one that wanted me more after not having felt wanted for the 4 years there. And it was great. It's kind of where I needed to be. It was a smaller school where I could get that personal attention and kind of like be a big fish in a small pond. But truthfully, my high school was so much more competitive and so much harder. And I felt like I was slacking off and partying and still getting straight A's. And so I transferred to Purdue University, and that's where I found the radio station.
That's really awesome. And that's so cool. I love Nicole's music and I've watched her be like a judge on different shows, more recently, The Masked Singer and stuff. That's really awesome.
Oh, I love that you know her. Yeah, I am kind of a secret stalker of hers now. But yeah, I like have pictures of us from high school. And it's funny, I interviewed this guy, Emmanuel Kelly, and he recently collaborated with her or met her in person. I was like, hey, I've had you on. Can you like, you know, poke her for me? Like tell her she kind of changed my life. But yeah, not everybody is willing to do that.
That's really cool. And I know that you've kind of talked a little bit like about the beginning of your career, but can you tell us a little bit about like some of like the hard stuff, the good stuff, and like advice? I know we've talked about like asking, because the answer will be no if you don't ask, but what would be some of your advice for people that like want to get into that, and what can they expect starting in the radio production TV space?
I really think that if you move to LA or New York and you are willing to put in the hours and you were willing to ask and to try different things that really anyone can break into the industry if you have a good attitude. I have seen so many people start off as production assistants, assistant editors, coffee runners, secretaries that have become executive producers. It's crazy. It's amazing. If you have the drive and you see it as a long game and you can learn from the people around you and you are a risk taker, it's the best thing to do in your 20s, honestly. I moved to LA and bounced from show to show and tried so many different things. Like, I worked on small films as a script supervisor. I was a post-production supervisor and didn't even know how to output a tape, but I was willing to work third shift until something opened up on the day shift. And I was willing to walk into an editor's bay and be like, hey, what do you not want to do? How can I make your job easier? Like, you don't like to fill out time cards? I'll fill out your time card. You don't want to get up to get a cup of coffee? I'll learn what kind of coffee you like and how you take it. You know what I mean? So
that's really awesome.
Yeah, I do feel like that's been part of my key to success, is like doing what other people don't want to do.
It makes complete sense, because then obviously they'll notice you more if you are putting yourself out there versus just doing what you're told to do.
I even think in networking, that's a mistake that people make. Like, a lot of times when you go networking, it's all about you and mm-hmm. like what you're looking to do and like what you're looking to sell. But if you flip that and you're like, hey, what are you building? What do you need help with? What do you hate doing? Or like, where could I maybe help you?
Exactly.
Yeah, you'll be a lot more successful if you can figure out how you can help somebody else out first.
I completely agree with you. And I think even in like the podcasting space, I know that multiple different groups, I've seen different people post and be like, I want to have people on my podcast, but I only want you on my podcast if your podcast is in like this top percentage, or if you have this many listeners, because I want you to be able to help me grow and whatever. Or on Threads, I saw someone post the other day that they were going to start taking down guests' episodes on their podcast if the guest didn't post about the podcasting experience with them within 30 days.
I also have seen that, and I think
it doesn't make sense to me. It's like,
yeah, I think they're really missing the mark.
Exactly. You're taking away from one, something that you worked hard on, and two, like that person, what you said and what that person said, it could be impacting somebody. You never know. Like, even like someone that just listened to it, but might have been like, oh my gosh, that was so inspiring. I want to share it with others, or I want to re-listen to that. And you could take that away all because somebody didn't share it with their audience. Like, I don't know. I think that that's the wrong approach to it. Because if you are letting them come on your show or your podcast, whatever, like, it shouldn't just necessarily be about what you get out of it. It should also be about what they're able to help your audience with.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking about an episode right now where I had such a good rapport with the host. Like, we knew each other for years, and then he launched a show. I had booked him on another show, and we had kept in touch for like 6 years. And it was very unscripted, and I didn't know what was coming. And, you know, after every episode, you're always like, could I have done better? That's like the perfectionist in me. And then somebody reached out to me that I had met at an event in town locally, and they're like, I loved your episode with so-and-so. And I was thinking to myself, I could have done better on that one. But then I'm thinking like, wow, maybe I should introduce those two people if he loved the style of that one so much, right? Like, that's a value add.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I feel like too, like, people that have come on the podcast, a lot of the times, like, I've learned something and taken away something from that conversation. So even if nobody listens to that episode, or no one takes away something from the episode when they listen, like I did. And so I don't know, I don't get the whole needing to have someone do all this for you in order for you to have them on your podcast or to do something. Like, I don't know. I just to me, it doesn't make sense.
I'm with you. And also, do you ever think about, I know you're a spiritual person, like that God is presenting these people to you and these opportunities to you? Like, I believe in that.
I absolutely do. I think that there have been times where I've seen a post or I've made a post and someone has commented on it, or, you know, I've had someone's name come to mind when I've thought of a different topic that I may want to talk about. And I'm like, oh, they would be a great guest for that, whatever it may be. Or I've seen their post talking about their story. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be awesome to have them on the podcast and talk about X, Y, and Z. And then I've reached out and they've been interested. And I don't know. I definitely think that. And I think, you know, even if somebody never shared about the podcast episode that they were on, you know, maybe their audience wasn't meant to be my audience, you know, and I don't think that that's a bad thing.
Yeah, 100%. And that also makes me think about like the flow of life. And if there's too many blocks, or you're coming into blocks again and again, like you got to recognize that too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And before moving on to talk about your podcast and all of that, I know you've worked on many different shows. What would you say was your favorite like celebrity to work with? And what was your favorite show that you worked on?
It's hard to pick a favorite because I feel like, you know, the Jerry Springer show is what people remember about me. But when you're just now asking me that, there was a show that I worked on called Kill Reality. And it was like a bunch of different reality stars from a bunch of different shows. So like from Survivor and Real World and Apprentice and like all of these different shows, Amazing Race. And they had taken like characters from each one of these shows and they put them all in a house together. And then they had an opportunity to star in like a Hollywood feature. So they had one crew that was, you know, filming them in the house when they lived together. And then they had another crew that was filming the movie. So I was on the reality TV show side. I was a field interviewer and it was an around the clock production. And your shifts changed and there was so much drama in the house and so much hookups and so much craziness. I mean, if you can imagine like pulling people that are big stars on each one of these shows and they're all hot and they're all young and they're all sleeping together and, you know, and they're all getting their chance to like star in a Hollywood movie. It was crazy. And there were blurred lines, let's just say, between the cast and the crew.
That I've never heard of that. That sounds really, I don't know. It sounds, it was kind crazy. Of odd, but like at the same time, like it would be one of those shows that you'd put on, you'd be like, this is so bad, but I can't stop watching.
Yes, I've worked on many shows that are like that. Right? Like even Springer, you're like, why am I so into this when like 90% of it is the same storyline? You're like, it's all, you know, I'm cheating on you with either my neighbor, a stripper, a tranny, or my brother.
Like, yeah, basically.
Yeah. But yeah, it's the people involved in the story. And that's the thing I learned too. It doesn't even honestly matter the storyline. It's the people and how they tell it. Like I've had people on my podcast too that have never been on another show and they have been some of the best guests. Like I interviewed this chick early on who was a mental health worker by day and a phone sex operator at night. And I'm like, that is fascinating. She's like, you'd be surprised. It's like the same work.
That is too funny. What is that show on that you were talking about? Do you know if it's like streamable?
It probably is. I'll have to find you a link. It was an E show. So it was on the E network. Mm-hmm. Remember when they were big? E Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the name of it was called Kill Reality. And the movie that was like direct to DVD, I think was called Scorned.
I'm going to have to look this up now.
Oh my God. I actually am still in touch with one of the guys, Rob Cisternino. He's a podcaster now. He has a show called I Have a Podcast, or Rob Has a Podcast. And he's been podcasting since that show almost for mm-hmm. he was like one of the very early adopters of podcasting, and he interviews all of the people on reality TV. He has a huge following, and yeah, I've known him since like 2005, 2006. He's hysterical. He was actually hysterical to work with too. He's a complete character, and he's a dad now. And that's the thing too. Like when I worked in reality TV, like I feel like there were no parents. Like everyone was in their 20s. Everyone was partying. It was a great thing to do when you have no responsibilities. But I always, when I was living in LA, thought to myself, like, could I raise kids here? Could mm-hmm. I marry a guy from here? Like, would I really want that? And what would that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that space would be really hard to raise a family. Obviously, a lot of people do it. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are also a lot of celebrities that, you know, keep their kids out of the public eye, don't post their kids' faces and all of that. And like, even with the new documentary, the Quiet on Set documentary, like, not that I didn't know that that kind of stuff was going on, but it was really hard to watch. So it's like, that is so sad mm-hmm. about what happened to those poor kids, and no one listened to them. And I wouldn't want to raise kids in that environment. Or if I were to, I would definitely be one of the parents that kept my kids more on the private side.
Yeah, 100%. And I started feeling like that too, even just in driving around town and what I saw on the billboards. I was like, I became sensitive to it. Like mm-hmm. as I started to think about wanting a family of my own, because I didn't grow up like that. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Kentucky, like, you know, and when I was being raised, I had four grandparents and great grandparents, and we weren't flashy people. And it seemed so counter to my upbringing that it didn't feel like something that I could imagine.
Absolutely. That makes complete sense. And switching gears a little bit, I know we've kind of talked about podcasting, but can you tell us about the Better Call Daddy show?
Yeah. So my dad has always really been who I've called. And, you know, even in my work stuff, it was funny. I was working for Kathy Heller, host of Don't Keep Your Day Job. And I was helping her put on an event with like 350 people. And my dad was actually in LA at the time. And he was meeting with a client, and I think I was like 7 months pregnant, and I'm like, you know, managing the guests and the green rooms and putting out the stuff for the sponsors and just running around. And my dad was like, I'll be your PA, like I'll be your production assistant. You know, he knew that I had had a prior miscarriage, and he was just like worried about me, like working up until the end. And, you know, that's the kind of dad that I've had. So one, he's known me my whole life. Two, I'm like the girl version of him. I knew he wouldn't back out on me. He was like always my right hand. And so I felt like he was giving me a lot of good advice in my own life. And I wanted to kind of share that with the world. But what the show has turned into is that a lot of other people have amazing wisdom that they can share with us. So we've been upping our wisdom rating together. And I interview the guests, I share the stories with him, and then the guests can either ask my dad a question or he reflects on the conversation that we've had together.
That's really awesome. I've really enjoyed the episodes that I've listened to of your podcast. And what would you say that your favorite part about doing it, besides getting to do it with your dad?
I would say getting to interview Jerry Springer before he passed away was a huge special moment and validation for me. Mm-hmm. And then too, just like talking about all of these crazy subjects with my dad that I never would have even dreamed up on my own. So I recently interviewed somebody about leaving Scientology. I interviewed a guy that was a sperm donor to 23 babies and counting. I interviewed a lady who was actually on the healthcare podcast that I produced, and she got super personal with me. Not only has she worked a corporate job for 40 years, but she's been an entrepreneur on the side, and she's been a mom, and she got into the subject of abortion. And, you know, when my dad met her in person and we did a live recording with her, he really changed his mind on abortion because he heard her story, he met her, he listened to her circumstance, and that was such a deep conversation and realization. And I felt like a intergenerational shift there. It was that one really stayed with me. And then, you know, just connecting with other podcasters like we're doing right now, I feel like adds to my wisdom rating and gives me new ideas. Every person that you connect with is going to ask you something in a different way and help you see yourself in a different way and help you improve in some way. And so I'm addicted to it for that reason alone.
I absolutely agree with you. I love that. I feel like I resonate with a lot of what you said. And I think that that's so awesome about like a different person, like someone having an influence on his view on the subject. Because I think that going into podcasting, I think one of the things that is so important is to go into it with an open mind and not to just have guests that agree with everything that you agree with. And like, because that's just a kind of a boring show if you guys are just going, yes, that's great, I agree with you the whole entire time. I think that it's important to have people that can share different things and open your eyes to different things. And even if you don't end up changing your view on it or changing your mind on it, to have those conversations, I think, is so important, especially with like topics like abortion and different things like that. I think that especially in the Christian faith circle, I think sometimes people think, oh, well, we're not going to talk about it. And that's when it becomes a problem, because people don't talk about it and they don't educate themselves on it. And regardless of whether or not their view shifts or it stays the same, like, you still should be able to openly talk about it. Because if you don't, that's when it becomes more of a problem.
Oh, I'm 100% with you. I also talked to a woman and the husband where they were having a rift in their marriage over his addiction to porn. And she was like, absolutely not okay. You know, I can't let him do that. You know, it's against what I believe in. And they were working through it. But I loved how like honest she was willing to express her feelings on that. And then also letting me talk to her husband and getting the other perspective too.
Mm-hmm.
That was a tough one. And like you said, I'm actually surprised I didn't get more feedback on that abortion episode, because it's not really encouraged in Judaism either. And I think it's interesting to interview people from different faiths and talk about some of these things, as long as it's not done in like a hateful way. I really wanted to talk about the Israel conflict, and I didn't really want to express necessarily a political view of that, but I wanted somebody who could give the history behind what's happening. And so I interviewed a chief opinion editor at Newsweek who reports it very bipartisanly. And I felt like she did a really good explanation of what's happening from both sides, where, you know, if you can't cover speaking about it intelligently or hyper-intellectually, then maybe interview somebody else that can lend to the conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like there are a lot of people that I've had on that I can relate to some degree about what they're talking about, but I am totally open to having people that I can't relate to at all, because I think that there may be listeners that can relate to them. And if I can't share, you know, wisdom or perspective or whatever on it because I have not experienced it or don't know much about it, you know, even if I can just facilitate that conversation so that somebody else that can relate feels less alone, like, that's what, in my opinion, like, part of my podcast is all about, is being able to give that platform to people to be able to share their wisdom and their stories so that other people that listen can feel less alone and know that they have people out there that they can relate to.
I absolutely am right in line with you. I feel like our podcasts have a very similar mission. I was talking to another podcaster yesterday. I don't know if you're allowed to curse, but I think her show is called Shit That Goes On In Our Heads. Mm-hmm. And when we were talking about mental health, first of all, mental health has been a thread through pretty much everyone's story, I feel like, for the last 4 years. And probably it's been a thread for everyone's life. And now we're just willing to talk about it. But I have had a struggle with a neighbor for like the last 9 months. I don't know why she lets her dog poop in my yard every single day. And I was like, you know, it doesn't bother my kids. It doesn't bother my husband. They sidestep it. The only one it's driving completely mad is me. And when I had somebody from animal control say to me, she's not allowed to do that. She needs to pick it up. She needs to dispose of it. I'm going to fine her. I cannot tell you like how much relief that gave me. I literally wanted to jump through the phone and hug that guy. Just feeling heard and seen from one person makes you feel so much less crazy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like that is one thing that has been really neat with the podcast, with like different people that have messaged me and been like, oh my goodness, I related so much. And I felt so seen, because I wouldn't say that it's rare in my life that I feel seen and fully understood, but people like my husband, sometimes like he was super sick last month or the month before. I feel like the last few months have run together because I've had so much going on. But at one point he was feeling so miserable, and it was a lot of the same symptoms that I deal with on a regular basis, not for the same reason. But he looked at me and he was like, if this is how you feel on a daily basis, I am so sorry. And like, I just felt so seen that it was like one of the most seen moments I've felt like in a long time. And it was just, it was really interesting that, not that I wanted him to be in that type of pain and to feel like what I feel on a regular basis, but it was like, somebody gets it. Like, it's clicking in your head. Like, I know that you know my symptoms. I know you've seen me be miserable, but now you get it in a different way. Because when I would try to explain it to him, like, he'd kind of get it, but not fully get it. And so it was nice to have him finally somewhat understand it with the physical aspect of it as well.
I'm glad he's doing better. And yes, it's unfortunate that sometimes we have to go through it to really get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I know that you kind of touched on the intergenerational wisdom part of your podcast. Why do you think that is so important?
Well, I think it even goes along with the theme of your show. It's like you start asking yourself like bigger questions, like, why are we here? Why were you so adamant or putting pressure on your kids to carry on or to have children or to get married, right? You start asking all of these things and you're like, is my legacy tied to your legacy type of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And it was more of just trying to understand the world more, and who do I trust? Who do I go back to? My dad. And to be honest, there were periods of my life where I even questioned whether there was a God, but I was like, you know, they always say like, that God is kind of like a father in heaven or whatever. And I have such a good relationship with my dad that it has made me believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
And so why is intergenerational wisdom important? It's who I am. I mean, I don't think it was a mistake that when I was born, it was 5 generations, and that I've known almost, you know, most of my great grandparents and all of my grandparents for a good chunk of my life. Like, I still have like 3 grandparents and I'm 44. It's shaped me. It's for a reason. And so I wanted to understand that more. And I felt like too, like in society today, I feel like the world is like missing that piece. I didn't realize like how special that was growing up. It's a rarity. And so I wanted to bring that piece back. I've interviewed a 99-year-old. I've interviewed a 16-year-old. I've interviewed 89-year-olds. I love getting perspectives from different generations. I think that we need to bridge that gap more.
I love that. Yeah, I definitely take it for granted, I think, a lot that I have all of my parents' parents are still alive. And I did get to meet one of my great grandparents and a lot of my great uncles and aunts when I was a lot younger. I don't have a lot of memories with them, but I do have, you know, some pictures with them, and do have, you know, some general vague memories of some of them. And I think it's interesting that a lot of people, even my age, and I'm almost 30, that either never met grandparents or they lost their grandparents a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, look at 23andMe. Look at how many people are trying to figure out where they came from. Right? We all want to know. You know, even my five-year-old is like, what's your grandpa's dad? What's his dad? What's his dad? And like, how many generations can we go back? Not too many.
Mm-hmm.
What did they look like? What were they like? How would they handle what's happening in the world today? So my best connection to that is my dad, who's willing to go deep and listen to my podcast. My dad is literally like, if you think about the amount of special time that we have gotten together, over 350 episodes, and each one is close to an hour long. Not only is he willing to listen to them and weigh in on them, I mean, we're having conversations that aren't recorded too.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely enriched our life in having this creative project together later in life. I would encourage anyone to have some of these deeper conversations if you have relatives that you can interview and learn from.
I love that. And what would you say to people that don't have that don't have close-knit families, but want to work on starting their own legacy of wisdom and continuing that for future generations?
That's such a great question. One thing that I've learned in doing this show is if you don't have that, find a mentor, find a friend, find somebody who inspires you. And you can also be that for yourself. Do self-work. You can be that for yourself. I mean, it's great to have relationships. I love to interview people who are doing things that I want to do. I think start with that. Connect with people that are talented musicians, talented, you know, poets, talented dancers, whatever you want to learn, connect with people that are doing that. And then find mentors, reach out to relatives that fill you up, don't drag you down. Start there. And then maybe some of those things that you learn from those people can help patch up relationships that are harder to navigate.
I absolutely love that. I think that's great advice. I think sometimes people, when they think of like their families or whatever, they may not have that close relationship. Like you said, finding those mentors is really important. I think sometimes that isn't like very like common place to like look for people that are older, but there are so many people out there that don't have a lot of family close by that are older. They don't even have to be a ton older than you, but have lived a life that you can befriend. And those people would probably really appreciate having those people that are closer that they can pour love into and share different things that they've learned.
100%. And even through my kids' school, you know, they're encouraged to do like community service. There's so many opportunities for that, or, you know, through your church, through your synagogue, do some volunteer work. That'll change your life too.
Yes, absolutely. We used to, growing up on Thanksgiving, through a church that we went to at the time, we would deliver meals to old folks' homes and different people in the community that couldn't leave their house. And almost every single time we would ask, you know, is there anything that we can do for you, if they were older people? And we'd like change light bulbs or, you know, put batteries in smoke detectors. And some of those older people were like so appreciative and, you know, would talk your ear off if you'd let them, but we'd be like, oh, we've got other meals to deliver. But it was just so nice to be able to make their day. And, you know, like I said, even if it was just changing like a light bulb or something, being able to do something that they couldn't do for themselves.
Honestly, I was even thinking about this today. Like, what is something little that you can do that's an easy ask that can make somebody's day?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I did today was there was a guy who had me on his podcast. And like I said, we've been in touch for like 6 years, and he was going into surgery today. And he was like, I really try to be active on LinkedIn and I just don't have anything to post today. He was like, would you mind like doing a post? So I reposted our interview and I was like, hey, he's a dad. He's a loyal husband. He's an empowering coach. He's a mentor. He's a podcaster. If you haven't listened to this episode, you should. So easy. It's like the easiest ask and the easiest way to make somebody's day. It literally took me 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that I think a lot of people do is they overcomplicate things, or even just reaching out to someone and asking like, hey, was thinking of you. How are you doing?
Oh my gosh. Yes. How are you holding up?
Exactly. It can mean so much to them. And I think that is one thing that keeps people stuck a lot is not doing anything because they don't know what to do, or they feel like it has to be this big grand thing. And it doesn't have to be that complicated.
It really doesn't. I can't say yes to everyone. That is definitely something that I've had to work on, like mm-hmm. boundaries. Like I get a lot of requests, but if it's something that takes 5 minutes, or there's another guy, Jacob Lethbridge, I'm going to give him a shout out. He is one of, and another chick too, IG Live with Angela. These two are so good at gratitude messages. They literally do like 10 gratitude messages a day, where it's as simple as creating a voice note. And I've voice note you'd before, right? Just, hey, grateful for you. Love your content. You are positive. I'm glad you're in my life. That easy.
Yes. And you never know like what that person may be going through and how that could really make their day or their week. Like maybe they're going through something really hard and they just haven't wanted to reach out or make a post about it. Because there's a lot of times I don't post a lot of stuff about hard stuff I'm going through. And I'm not saying that I am not authentic. I will post about stuff sometimes, but I normally don't share specifics and I don't post every single time I have like a bad day. And so I think that there are times where people have reached out to me and I'm like, oh, that was really much needed, because nobody, if I wasn't talking to them on a daily basis, would even know that I was struggling at that time.
100%. Yeah. One of the guys that I reached out to today, I knew that he had recently lost his brother-in-law. That pain doesn't go away for months.
Mm-hmm.
Months. And just saying, hey, how are you holding up? Was literally all I had to say. And then he was like, hey, you know, I'm going to be in Florida soon. Are you going to be there? I was like, hey, actually I am. Like we both have a vacation spot that are close by to each other. So he was like, thank you so much. I really appreciate you for reaching out. And now we might cross paths again.
That's really awesome. I love that. I think grief, that is something that I think that when people pass and you know that someone had something that passed recently, I think reaching out to them often, even if it's not like every day or every week, like reaching out to them past the first week is so important, because I know from losing my friend last year in February, there was a lot of people that reached out to me during the first week, which was great. And I appreciate it. And I'm not saying that I don't, but after that, not a lot of people did. And it was still really hard and still is really hard some days, especially around the 1 year mark back in February. And I think that it's important to realize that whether it's grief or somebody, you know, was in a car accident or whatever, like, don't just reach out to them when they make a post, because it's going to be hard for a while. And more than likely, there are not going to be a lot of people reaching out to them every day or weekly past a certain point.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm so sorry about your friend. And I 100% agree with you. And like three people came to mind now that after this, I'm going to reach out to you and just say, hey, how are you holding up?
That's awesome. I'm glad to hear it. And yeah, it was really hard. And luckily, I'm friends with her brother and have been friends with him for a very long time. So whenever I would be missing her extra, I would know obviously he is too. So it would make it a lot easier to like think to reach out to him, because I knew that he was also going through it. And I think that helped. Because, you know, we could talk to each other. And like I said, it reminded me to reach out to him. But I think going through that definitely has opened my eyes to trying to make sure that I do a better job at reaching out to people, not just within the first week of when they post about losing somebody.
It's really such a beautiful message. It really is.
And I know that you had talked a little bit about more towards the beginning about how you work with people about starting podcasts and giving advice, but what would be a couple things that you would tell anyone that's listening advice for if they want to start a podcast?
Yeah, thank you for that. I think the biggest thing is like, one, get started. I think a lot of people overthink it in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I overthought it. I'm a perfectionist in a lot of ways. I felt like I had to have so much in place prior to starting. You know, you can be strategic, but also you are going to learn along the way and you're going to have to like course correct, just like with finding a job or in marriage or in being a good mom. There's a lot of course correction along the way. And I feel like so many people will either start and quit or just like overthink it for like a year before starting. As a mompreneur who has a limited time and limited hours in her day, like if I have an idea, I have to act so frequently, quickly, just to get it done. Because if I don't get it done, I just won't do it. If it doesn't go on my calendar, it's not going to happen. So if you want to start a podcast, just know that like you're going to learn some things as you go. It's really with technology today, like there are so many tools to get you started. You know, there's free tools or there's paid tools, and there's low cost mics and there's upgraded mics. There's low cost cameras, upgraded cameras. You can start with audio. You can start with audio and video. You could record both and not use one. Just start. And I think also start with people who love you and are going to give you grace. You know, start with people who are already a fan of you. And like, if you need to start over, if you forget to hit record, or if there's a baby in the background or a bad internet connection or any of these things that are going to ultimately happen, start with people who you've had good experiences with, and they're going to be flexible with you and that are going to cheer you on and are going to be honored to be on your podcast.
I completely agree. I think that that is one thing that I'm glad that I didn't do, because I have a tendency to be like, I need to have a plan all written out and all this stuff. And when it came to podcasting, I was like, you know what? As long as I come up with a name and like a brief description of like, and kind of like goals to kind of keep within that parameter, I'm just going to go for it. And when I recorded my first podcast episode, I honestly had no idea, besides telling a little bit about myself, what on earth I was going to say. And with most solo episodes, I just wing it. I have no idea. I've got no talking points, really. I'm just like, I'm going to talk about this topic and go for it. And I think that that is one thing that I think a lot of people, when I've talked to them about, oh, I want to start a podcast, how did you get started? And they feel like they have to have all these things, you know, an Instagram for it, an email. And I'm not saying that those things aren't good, but if you just start it and share it with a few people to start, and then once you get some listeners and you start to build your confidence, then start to expand and grow, like you'll end up with a lot more of a result, at least in my opinion, than if you're just making all of these things. Because also you may find that you don't even like podcasting, and then you have put in all this time to make an Instagram, an email, and all this stuff, and you don't get past the first 5 episodes. So
yeah, I'm 100% with you. And why don't you try guesting on other people's shows first and see if you even like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with your podcast, I believe I saw somewhere, I don't know on what, maybe it was the Better Call Daddy website, about how you have sponsors. So for people that are wanting to start a podcast, or they have a podcast and they're like, hey, I'm looking to do ads and sponsors, what is like some tips that you have for people to get that started?
Well, one way is, you know, I was working for a guy who was putting on events, and I was helping him book speakers. And so one of the speakers at this D2C conference was one of the VPs of Manscaped. So I did reach out to Manscaped in the beginning, and I'm like, hey, you have a controversial brand. I want to cover some controversial subject matters. And, you know, I've worked for a couple podcasters, and once I grow my audience, my price is going to go up. Would you guys like to be like my first sponsor and give me a shot? I know you give a lot of other podcasters a shot. You got to kind of like do your research.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have that relationship. And so I did launch with a sponsor. And then when you launch with a sponsor, then other people are like, oh, wow, how'd you get that sponsor? And I'm interested in being a sponsor. Like, honestly, my second sponsor came like that. She was a client. And also in the beginning, I didn't know that you could do dynamic ad insertion, which means, you know, you can insert it through your host. So Podbean is my host, and it allows you to plop it at the front of your episode, in the middle of your episode, at the end of your episode. You pick the placement. You could even pick a specific time code of where you want to put it. And, you know, you can do a host read ad, or some brands want you to read their copy. You have to decide if that copy is even like true to you, true to your brand, true to the message you want to give. There's so many factors in it. But I would say, you know, if there's products that you use or things that you feel like would fit in with your show. So another one I had was like WTF Novelties. They have like these fun, crazy like bath bombs. And, you know, when I was having Jerry Springer on, they were interested in him as a guest. I would look for, you know, if you have a big guest, then you might be able to reach out to big brands. Mm-hmm. Or if you're having a reality star, like, do they have a sponsor? You know, so it's doing your research. It's figuring out who's brand aligned. And then back to our theme of the show, asking.
Yes, absolutely. That is one thing that I haven't done too much of yet, but that is something that I'm wanting to look into, because with being chronically ill and not able to work, but being able to do the podcasting like around my health, I think that it would be really cool to be able to make some money while doing it, because then I could help contribute to the bills and also still be doing something that I enjoy. And like I said, that I can also do around my health, which that's one thing too with the podcasting. Like, people sometimes will be like, oh, well, most people put it out an episode every week, but you're the host of your podcast. So, and you're the boss. So you don't have to do that. If you want to put out an episode at the beginning of every month and only put out one, probably won't get a huge amount of listeners to start with that way, I wouldn't think. But like, you can tweak it, and you can also tweak it as you're going. Like, if you have an episode come out a week and you realize that's too much for you, do an episode every other week. Or like, I do batch recording. So I record 2 months in a row, and then I take a month off to, you know, take my migraine shots and recover from those, and also plan for the next batch. And I probably would do that anyway, honestly, to give myself a little bit of a break from recording and also be able to plan for the next ones. But I think that, you know, you can change how you do your show, as long as obviously you're not changing it all the time, because then that would just get super confusing for the listeners. But it doesn't have to be this cut and dry thing. It doesn't have to be what everyone else is doing. Obviously, depending on what it is, it may be better to kind of do what everyone else is doing to a point, because that's what works. But you're the boss and of, you know, and the host of your show. So do what works for you.
Yeah. I am 100% with you. When I first started, I was so gung-ho on like interviewing all of these people that I wanted to connect to. And I was releasing 3 a week. And then that became crazy once I started getting more clients. So then I cut back to 2 a week. And now I'm really down to 1 a week. But sometimes if I have the bandwidth, I'll release 2 a week. So I'm between 1 and 2 a week. And like you said, I try to keep to like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I've kept to that schedule as far as when I release. I have consistently released for like the last 4 years, at least 1 a week. And I think, again, do what works for you. And as far as the sponsors, I would say, you know, there's this podcaster, David Hirsch, and he has a podcast where he interviews all dads that have special needs or disabled children. And he has one sponsor that literally pays him a hefty fee for the year. And it's because, you know, he believes in the show, believes in the mission, and his business is tailored to special needs children. So you can literally have one sponsor and be set. with a good chunk of change if you find the right one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that you have been a guest on podcasts, obviously, and you host, but what would you say that you prefer? Do you have a preference of guesting versus hosting?
I love to interview because I love to go deep with people and glean lessons from their story and what they've overcome and what they've accomplished. But I am working on getting better and at being interviewed and being on the other side of the mic. I think it's an important skill to be able to do both.
Absolutely. And I have yet to do both, but I will be doing both soon. For those that are listening, I don't know when my episode with on the Better Call Daddy show is coming out, but I am going to be recording for that and a couple other podcasts. So if you check out my website, which is attached to the beautiful underscore legacy Instagram, on the last page of my website, there will be links to all of the podcasts that I have recorded with or will be recording with once they're out.
I am so excited that I get to be one of the first ones that you do that with.
Yes, you're actually the first one, as long as we have power tomorrow and the storm doesn't take us out.
Ah! I'm honored.
I'm excited. It's going to be so fun. And I really appreciate, again, you giving me some of your time today. Is there anything else that I may not have asked or we haven't touched on that you would like to add before we wrap this up?
I just want to leave people with, one, find an encourager, and two, be an encourager to someone else, because the world needs more encouragement. And that is the message that I would like to leave people with, whether it's a voice note, whether it's buying somebody's book, whether it's dropping a 5-star rating on this episode. Find something little that you can do to make someone else's day.
I love that. And where can people find you? Where can people find the podcast? All the things.
Thank you. BetterCallDaddy.com or Rena Friedman Watts on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, Threads, all the socials.
Awesome. And for those that are listening, if you follow the Instagram, even if you miss the posts initially in the stories about this episode with the links to her website and the show and all of that, it will be in guest links. In the highlight. So you can always check out that even if you don't listen to this episode within the first week and, or well, I guess within the first 24 hours, because that's when it would be in the stories. And with the podcast being called Beautiful Legacy, I ask all the guests, what kind of legacy do you want to leave and why?
I want to leave a legacy that is attached to the generation and generations before me. That has been a very strong message from my family. It's not just about your children, it's about your children's children, and also knowing where you came from. So some people have a legacy that is just their own, and I want my legacy to be tied to my family in some way.
That's awesome. And besides the podcast, what would you say that you are doing to make that happen?
I baked a birthday cake today and I let three out of my four kids stay home and help decorate it. And we got all different color icings. We made a vanilla cake and we made all of the planets of the galaxy that they could think of. And, you know, my husband is like big on camping. It's something that is, I can't do. I've totally got back problems, but I am letting him take three of my kids camping. They bought a new tent yesterday, new sleeping bags. They are so excited. And I'm trying to just encourage activities that my kids come up with or creative activities for them to participate in. I want to do more experiences and, you know, be in real life. More memories.
I love that. That is awesome. I love camping, but I cannot camp, like sleep on the ground with the fact that my back is so messed up. When we tent, we have a blow up futon air mattress. And then we've also had multiple campers, like pop-up campers over the years, but we do have to still double up the mattress because those mattresses in those campers are not very comfortable if you don't double them up or put like a foam mattress topper on them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've tried it. I do better in the hotel.
Yeah, I'm sure those beds are a lot more comfortable. I, like I said, I do love camping, but my back, on the other hand, does not.
Same.
Well, again, thank you so much for being with us today. And to the listeners, as always, you are loved, you are worth it, you are priceless, and I will talk to you all later.